I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. The Pew Charitable Trust's Philadelphia Research Initiative released a report a few weeks ago about the city's poverty rate of 25%, the highest among the country's major cities. That's a statistic that has largely been unchanged in the last decade, even as Philadelphia has been experiencing a real revival. A new report by Hunger Free America found that almost 20% of households in Philadelphia are food insecure today, increasing from 15% about 5 years ago and bucking the national trend. And Children's Health Watch Philadelphia found that food insecurity is increasing for households with children under the age of four. It's even worse with a caregiver who works at least 20 hours a week. Food insecurity means not enough food for an active and healthy life. Today on Radio Times, why are so many so poor in Philadelphia and what can be done about it? We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Sister Mary Scullion, President and Executive Director of Project Home. Sister Mary, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be back, Marty.
Also with us is Mariana Chilton, and she's Director of the Center for Hunger-Free Communities at Drexel University and Co-Principal Investigator of Children's Health Watch. Mariana, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. And joining us by telephone is Maria Quinones Sanchez. She's a councilwoman representing the 7th District in Philadelphia, currently in her third term. And Maria Quinones Sanchez, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Happy to be here.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Marianne Chilton, let me begin with you, only because my intro was a lot about food insecurity. Help us understand what that actually is and what that means.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for asking, and I'm really delighted to be back. And I just wanted to start in by giving a shout-out to the members of Witnesses to Hunger and all of the people that we've been interviewing at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children over the past 13 years. We've talked to over 10,000 families in North Philadelphia and also members of Witnesses to Hunger. We have over 100 members and other members in my other studies that have learned a lot about the experience of poverty. So as a researcher, we know that food insecurity is the lack of access to enough food for an active and healthy life. It has two components. One of them is not having enough. That's when we think about hunger, not having enough food. But then you can have families who have food on the table, but it's very low quality food because it's low cost. So they have very repetitive diets, maybe eating oodles of noodles for weeks at a time. And that has the health component. That's not the right kind of food for an active and healthy life. So food insecurity is directly related to very poor health all across the lifespan. From times in utero, it's related to low birth weight, it's related to poor child development, suicidal ideation among adolescents, and depression among adults. Those are the mental health problems associated with it, but there's lots of physical health problems as well.
And I want to pick up on all of that. Sister Mary, you've been an advocate, I should say, and an activist at time for homelessness in the city for almost 40 years. Are we making progress?
We are, Marty, against some very difficult public policy issues, which we're witnessing again this week.
With the
tax plan, which now created another $1 trillion deficit, while, they have not passed yet CHIP for health care for kids, which, again, directly related to what Mariana is talking about, where children in our country, millions of children in our country are now in jeopardy by this bipartisan legislation, which was CHIP, health care for children, that now has not been passed either. And now we have a $1 trillion deficit. And how are they going to balance that after giving these huge tax breaks to corporations who have boatloads of money anyway? And now they're debating, about this health care for children.
I want to pick up on that as well. And Councilwoman Quinones Sanchez, let me get you in on the conversation as well. Is there urgency in City Council to address Philadelphia's poverty rate? I know the answer to that is yes. But why do you think it is so stuck at 25%?
Well, I think that we're always reacting to, as Sister Mary alluded to, federal and state policy that has been very unkind to major cities like Philadelphia. And I think one of the good things about both the research that's conducted and as we look at the data tells the story. And the story is that we have a very traumatized structural poverty in the city of Philadelphia. And we that forces council to try to be as proactive as it can around housing policy. We've been very aggressive about affordable housing as we debate mixed income housing. We passed a $100 million bond last year to look at housing preservation because we understand that the instability of housing could really destabilize families and children, particularly those in deep poverty.
And I want to pick up on several things, including the reference that the councilwoman made to trauma. And let me read something that's in the paper, Dave, from Jean Felton. She's director of the Master's Program in Community and Trauma Counseling at Thomas Jefferson University. And she had a piece in the Inquirer today. And I'll read it here. A 2013 study found that 40% of Philadelphia residents, three times higher than the national sample, report experiencing high doses of adverse childhood experiences, including abuse, neglect, witnessing domestic violence, or growing up with a mentally ill parent. Marianne, you made some reference to that about the, I guess, the effect of trauma on certainly on children growing up. And then you imagine that child becomes an adult and then becomes a parent.
Yes, and that's what we often refer to as the intergenerational transfer of violence and poverty. And we've been tracking adverse childhood experiences at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children for several years now. And we know that food insecurity is related to trade-offs with paying for housing and paying for rent and paying for utilities. That we know is extremely important. It's the cost of housing, food, and utilities that really lands a young child into the hospital. We've also recognized that families have a lot of hardship, exposure to violence, exposure to abuse and neglect, but also the experience of hunger is a violent experience. It's a traumatic experience. So we have found that adverse childhood experiences is also related to very high rates of hunger. Mm. And so that's in the hunger world. A lot of people like to think that they can solve hunger with food. It's actually much more complicated than that. It really needs to have a good, like a recipe for dealing with issues of housing and utilities and also addressing family violence. And I would have to say community violence and historical violence. I think one thing that's a weakness in understanding trauma is that we tend to focus only on the family, but the family is living in a context of historical trauma. And one of the things I think is so important to think about is the history of redlining in the United States and also in Philadelphia. There was a lot of redlining happening in the 1920s and 1930s, which kept low-income people of color out of the neighborhoods that were improving and they couldn't get homes and things like that. Those issues, the housing discrimination, is still with us today, and we're documenting that at the Center for Hunger-Free Communities. So that trauma is not just family trauma, community violence. It's also historical trauma that's been passed on through the generations.
You're nodding your head, Sister Mary. Let me read something from the Philadelphia Citizen. There are 15,000 people who access shelter in Philadelphia each year, more than 100,000 people on the Philadelphia Housing Authority wait list. Is there a housing crisis in Philadelphia? And then we'll get to the councilwoman.
There is an affordable housing crisis in Philadelphia. If you're, obviously if you have the means, there isn't a crisis of housing in Philadelphia. But if you are low income, there is a serious housing crisis in Philadelphia. Absolutely.
I also read that something like a third of poor people — 28% of poor people in Philadelphia own their own homes.
Correct. And that's why City Council's $100 million bond issue is such a progressive legislation that was passed here locally by our City Council to preserve existing homeowners. But I also want to say something, that the issue of poverty in our city cannot be solved locally. We all pay federal taxes, and the federal government is the most strategic source of funding to end a national housing crisis. It's not just the city of Philadelphia. In every city around our country, people who are low income and middle income are facing a housing crisis. There was an article just recently in Seattle, Washington, where they have a 14% poverty rate, but nurses can't afford a place to stay in Seattle.
Oh, interesting. Councilwoman, let me go back to you and picking up on this affordable housing. I know you have this mandate for developers to set aside, 10% of units for affordable housing if they're building in the city?
We've been debating, what is it that we ask the private market to contribute to the affordable housing kind of portfolio, with a robust tax abatement program, and you've seen all of this development and this investment, right, by the city, and particularly in the center city core, millions and millions of dollars, and gets people feeling like there's a revival. And so to a certain degree, the city has subsidized a private market that has turned around our center city. And now we need to ask them to put some of that on the table for affordability, because we are in, as Mariana mentioned, in addition to the redlining, we are becoming a very segregated community, and then our policy is following that. If we're building the center city core and other developments for a very white community, affluent community, and we're forgetting about the hardworking poor, right, that city council has also aggressively tried to raise living wage, sick leave, and others, the quality of life for those folks. So I think our policy has to follow our aspirational goals. And I feel very strongly that we've helped subsidize, poor people have helped subsidize downtown, and now it's time for the private sector to give back.
You mentioned about segregated parts of Philadelphia. Are you talking, Councilwoman, racially, economically?
Both, and that's the troubling data set in the Pew report, right? You look at concentrated poverties, whether it's the Latino community that's the highest number of concentrated poverty, you know, they live in particular clusters or census tracts in the city of Philadelphia. And so we've almost missed the boat about, you know, what people talk about, at least for the folks who share my values around mixed income communities who have access to, you know, the amenities that the city is putting forth. And when you look at downtown and you look at what we're doing and outside the center city core as Point Breeze, as Liberties and other areas get built out, we're telling a story, and one where poor people of color are not going to have access to the things that our community block grant monies has subsidized for years. And I don't subscribe to that. I think that we could do better. I think there's some really good pieces that the mayor has put forth as tackling pre-K, education, and other things. And we talk about every zip code, but when you look at where we're putting our money, it's still not in every zip code. We look at downtown subsidy as investment. We look at homeless prevention and other things as expenses, and we need to change that paradigm.
That's a very interesting point. And Councilwoman, we're going to call you back and try to get you in on a better phone line. You keep clipping in and out. Marianne, and we're almost up at a break, but I know you want to add something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add more context in terms of the numbers of the people who are really struggling to pay for housing. More than half of the Philadelphia residents are paying more than 30% of their income on housing. We know that's a recipe for disaster for their health, their well-being, for their ability to afford food and utilities and other expenses.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Mariana Chilton, director of the Center for Hunger-Free Communities at Drexel University. Sister Mary Scullion with us as well in our Philadelphia studio here, and she is President, Executive Director of Project Home. And we hope to get Councilwoman Quiñones Sanchez on a better phone line after this very short break. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. What can be done to address Philadelphia's poverty problem? Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and we are talking in this hour of Radio Times about the fact that about 25% of people living in Philadelphia are poor, and the federal rate of poverty for a family of four is $24,300 a year. And a number of those people in Philadelphia who are poor are living in what is called deep poverty, and we are talking about all of that with Councilwoman Maria Quiñones Sanchez, Sister Mary Scullion, and Mariana Chilton. Let me go back to you, Sister Mary, and actually go back to your early activism that I remember on this issue that goes back probably 30 years or so. How much do you think it requires activists or witnesses for hunger, as you mentioned, Mariana Chilton, for activists to put the focus on poverty and put pressure on government, put pressure on public nonprofits, all that?
I think it's critically important, Marty, and I think that what we're seeing today, especially at a national level, we're seeing a lot more activism, the Women's March and many other, movements. And I think we will see more movements related to the issue of poverty, because poverty is institutionalized violence, as we spoke about, and it's killing people, it's killing our children, and it's just unacceptable. And I think that we're going to see a lot more anger around our country with, you know, responding to some of the policies and legislation that's coming down. People aren't just going to say, oh, it's okay, I have nothing. Families are living on $2 a day. Welfare has been cut. Health care for our children, health care for our families. These affordable housing, you know, it's just so critical, hunger. And the other important reality is change and progress takes time to come to fruition. And I think in the city of Philadelphia, we have a lot to be proud of, and we can demonstrate, you know, success. Obviously, a lot more has to be done. But when you look at in 1980, a person making who was working, you know, making minimum wage could afford 30% of their income to pay rent. Now, a person who is making minimum wage has to work 100 hours a week to meet the rent expenses. Obviously, that's not acceptable. And that's when, you know, you talk about the wage issue. But also in Philadelphia, of the 10 largest cities around the country, Philadelphia has the highest poverty rate. But of the 10 largest cities around the country, Philadelphia has the lowest per capita rate of people sleeping on our streets. Mm. I know that's hard for people to believe, but go to L.A., go to New York, go to San Francisco. The numbers of people are unbelievable. Seattle, Washington, 4,000 people on a given night are sleeping on their streets.
And you're saying not so in Philadelphia.
No, but that's progress. But we have too many people sleeping on our streets. But what I'm saying is we know how to solve these problems. And as the councilwoman said, we need an investment in affordable housing. We need an investment in education. The single most important thing to ending homelessness today is affordable housing. The single most important thing to ending homelessness for the future is a quality education for every single child.
And
we have to talk about that, too.
Absolutely. I do want to talk with you, though, Mariana Tilton, about, and this goes back to the report, having to do with people, many ways, women who are working. They're going to work.
Yep.
They have a job. They're still poor. They're still food insecure.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. A lot of people think, oh, well, the solution to food insecurity is that people just need to work or they need to work more. Well, actually, the majority of families who are on food stamps actually are working. Their wages are so low, however, that the federal government has to supplement their wages with SNAP benefit dollars or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or food stamps. So if you listen to any of the members of Witnesses to Hunger, you'll hear about their frustration with low wages. They're trying to get ahead. They're doing exactly what our society encourages them to do, which is to get out and, you know, hustle for a good job, try to take care of their kids, and they're doing the best that they can, and they still can't make ends meet. And I was thinking about Tiana Gaines Turner. She's a member of Witnesses to Hunger,
she's been on this show.
Yes, she has. And so we have a very strong action-oriented program where we have members of people from Philadelphia and around the Northeast who've experienced hunger and poverty to speak directly to legislators about those experiences. And Tiana Gaines was asked to testify before Paul Ryan's budget committee. This is before he became the Speaker of the House. And she was the first person in the House of Representatives that was invited to the House of Representatives that had experienced poverty, even though they were having a series of hearings on poverty. What did Tiana Gaines Turner talk about? She talked about how both she and her husband were working more than part-time. Her husband was working full-time, and they still couldn't afford to feed their children. So the first thing that she advocated for was to increase wages. And if you want to learn more about that, there's a little documentary about that, about her testimony there at the House, and it's called A Hug from Paul Ryan. And I think when you think about the tax scam that's right now getting ready to be passed on the Hill, and you think about what Paul Ryan is doing and what he's proposing, among many other members of Congress, is that if they're going to do these tax cuts for the rich, where is that money going to come from to pay off our debt? It's going to come out of what Paul Ryan is recommending. It comes out of the entitlement programs, which is food stamps. So that's something that we really have to pay attention to. We cannot allow that to happen. So we need many more Witnesses to Hunger, many people who've experienced hunger and poverty, to be able to speak up and take action.
But Tiana didn't change his mind. I mean, she might
she
have
didn't.
Moved
she
the
gave,
room, but she didn't change
she
his
moved,
mind.
She moved the room. She gave him a hug. He gave her a hug back. But from right. Tiana Gaines Turner's point of view, it didn't really matter to him.
Councilwoman, let me go back to you. And I'm looking at this report coming from Children's Health Watch Philadelphia. The average hourly wage for caregivers, and these are people that are still food insecure for their children, is $10.20 an hour. What can city council do, or can city council do anything to raise that wage, to create a living wage?
Yeah, I mean, I think council has been very proactive on this, and I think the campaign, the four-year campaign at the airport, was an example of city council using its platform to insist that the airport, the international airport that belongs to the city, not pay poverty wages. And I'll tell you, for me, that campaign was very eye-awakening. When I saw at 5 o'clock in the morning people who caught three buses to go work at what, $5, $7 an hour, and moving those people to $12 an hour and the ability to form a union was very, very transformative. And the stories, as Mariana highlights, are incredible. These are hardworking folks. And that's the problem that I have with this debate. When we talk about entitlement, folks, you know, assume that these we're giving away stuff. These are people who are working because we have not been able at a state level to increase our minimum wage to a living wage. So people are working two jobs, three jobs. And, you know, they're so resilient. You know, we can't forget that in this discussion. These are hardworking people that despite every policy obstacle we throw their way, you know, they still believe that they can have a better quality of life for their children, if not for themselves. And that's why we got to continue to push at the state level. And Sister Mary is right, you know, we got to push the federal government to do its part. And for us here in the city of Philadelphia, we are as proactive and as progressive as we can be. But we're growing incredibly frustrated at the lack of urgency from other government.
Well, you know, I scribbled down a question here, or just a couple of words here, that is it that we don't know poor people? I mean, is that part of the problem? Is it the average American? And, of course, the average American in many ways probably is to some degree, if not low income, but maybe even poor. But there's a kind of a divide. I'm looking at you, Sister Mary, but I know
there
is something you want to come into.
There is a divide. There is definitely a divide. But I really think that what has hijacked public policy, especially at the federal level, is the campaign financing laws. And that you look at, like, Koch, the Koch brothers gave to me, like, millions of dollars. So, you know, and then you look at the rhetoric and how Trump won the election through the divide and the social media and the fake news and all that. And I think we're in a whole new ball game right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to think strategically, and we have to educate people who are poor, which we do. We have Vote for Homes, to get out and vote, to speak up, not to be quiet. I mean, people have to have their voices raised, and we have to do a better job at getting authentic voices out in the public arena. And believe you me, we will, but you know, things have just changed so rapidly and so fast. It's just hard to keep up with everything.
Right? Go ahead,
and if I could add to that, I think that in the nonprofit world, they've been very successful in keeping people who are poor quiet. I'm sad to say that, but in the nonprofit world, I think that you have people who are executive directors who think that they speak on behalf of people who are poor. Over the past 9 years with Members of Witnesses to Hunger, we've been trying to flip that narrative. There's so much stigma and so much racism that's out there against people who are poor. It's classism, racism, and misogyny. So what Members of Witnesses to Hunger are doing is they are speaking out in the halls of Congress. They are speaking out at city halls, state houses, et cetera, to be able to advocate on their own behalf. I think many of us it's upon us to make sure that we're putting those who know the experience of hunger and poverty firsthand out in front to demand a better conversation and to reduce and overcome and sort of overturn that stigma that they experience. And I think we also need to create more spaces in the city of Philadelphia and beyond where people who are poor and people who are wealthy can come together. And that's why we launched the eCafe. It's our community cafe. It stands for Everyone at the Table. It's in West Philadelphia at 38th and Lancaster. And that's a place where people who are wealthy and who are poor can come together and eat, eat in the same restaurant, eat the same food, and not have to prove whether they're worth it or not. It's a pay what you can model. We serve everyone as a patron, and then they can decide at the end of the meal how much they can pay. Mm. We need more opportunities like that for people to mix and mingle together.
Let me read an email from Kathy. She says, how are your speakers collaborating to ensure that funds spent are making a difference? How do we hold ourselves accountable for making a difference? Let me go back to you, Councilwoman. Is there something council can do that can make a bigger difference in making a bigger dent in poverty in Philadelphia?
I think the issue of accountability and transparency is hugely important. And I want to add to Mariana's point, you know, one of the things that I quickly saw, you know, I'm chair of appropriations now. One of the things that I quickly saw was that there's a lot of investment in Eastern North Philadelphia. And one of my tasks was, and it's not a pretty task, is really to ask, you know, executive directors and organizations, is if you lost all your funding, are you? What is your value, right? And this notion that I'm only going to do what I'm funded to do versus a community mission, you know, it took years of kind of conversations and saying, you got to own something. You got to tell me, is it a 3-block radius, a 4-block radius, you know, or are organizations, and in my case, I'm very, very good, large, robust organizations, is are you going to be an island within this, you know, structure of this community? And it took me years to get them to understand that, you know, they had a responsibility beyond what they are funded for and to be more mission-driven about getting more engaged. But that didn't come easy because when you look at the numbers, you know, I have to make a case in council to the mayor about investments. And I think we have to add to transparency around nonprofits. Clients deserve the right to know what's going on within the nonprofit, be part of the decision making, look at salaries and other things within the organizations. And that's part of the education process, because if people don't believe, you know, everybody who works in a nonprofit, everybody who works for me is working for people. And we need to understand that. And I think that part of the reason people are apathetic and don't believe their vote counts or their voice counts is because we've created a structure that hasn't permitted those voices to rise. And I agree. I think the one thing that should come out of social media and the ability to see things through the internet world is people need to get more informed about this. People need to be empowered by their circumstance to say, you know, I'm not asking for a hand out, right? I'm asking for a hand up because I'm working hard, right? I grew up in Hunting Park, and I have the greatest respect for the working poor in Hunting Park because people bought houses. You know, when you talk about home ownership, it's one of the areas in my district with like a huge, number of folks who are homeowners and have this incredible debt situation, whether it was taxes, which is why the city council passed income-based tax payment programs, water affordability, which is why I passed the water affordability. We got to show folks that we believe that we have all have a responsibility to move everyone up.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. Let me just jump in only because Tiffany from Northeast Philly has been hanging on very patiently. And Tiffany, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi, I'm a private landlord. I rent out a 3-bedroom home in Northeast Philadelphia. And every time my lease is up, I look into the voucher program, which I think is formally called Section 8. And the process to rent out via the voucher program to low-income families just seems so daunting. You know, it involves me going downtown and standing in long lines and I think taking a course for a day and some other things. And I'm just wondering if, you know, incentivizing private landlords like myself and kind of streamlining that process to rent private homes to lower-income families could be a part of the solution. And I wonder if city council can kind of focus on maybe something like that as to help with housing for low-income families. Thank you.
Sure, Tiffany. I appreciate the call. And let me just, only because I want to give both of my guests who want to jump on an answer to your question, Tiffany. Sister Mary, go ahead.
I think, Tiffany, part of the problem is that the federal government is cutting back the housing vouchers. So the problem is not so much that we can't that the city can't find landlords. The problem is there's not enough vouchers to go around.
Well, if I could add to that,
sure,
I think, well, Section 8 has been closed for most of the year and is closed for years at a time. That's one issue. But the other issue
meaning
is
a long waiting list.
It's a huge
100,000 people.
Yeah. Right. The other thing is that I think, Tiffany, you're bringing up a really important point, which is our government systems do not work well. And it seems from the perspective of people who are on those systems and trying to participate and navigate and negotiate that those systems are geared to keep people down. We've heard that from members of witnesses over and over again, how hard it is for them to navigate the systems. The government makes it very hard for them to apply. The humiliation of waiting in line, the waste of time, the disrespect towards people who are poor, and also I'd have to say towards you, Tiffany, as a landlord, making you wait in line to do this onerous, outdated process to apply for housing. And that's why in one of our programs called the Building Wealth and Health Network, we're working with people who are on cash welfare or TANF. And we've recognized that in TANF, that system as well makes it really hard for people to navigate their system. And we're trying to simplify that system, providing trauma-informed peer support, helping people open up bank accounts, helping people to ease up some of the pressure and the stress in their lives. And we've had a major impact on not only shifting and changing that system of cash welfare in the city of Philadelphia, but also improving the lives of people who are on the program. We've been able to reduce depression and food insecurity.
But that's a handful of people. The reality is there isn't enough resources the reality is there is nowhere near enough subsidies for people in our city to live in affordable housing.
I'm saying it's twofold, however. It's not just the resources. It's the systems themselves that need improvement and updating.
Well, Councilwoman, about 30 seconds before our break. Anything you want to add very briefly, if you don't mind?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, we've had challenges working with PHA. I know for the Latino community, having lived in a PHA home, scattered site in the past, you know, we represent 20% of the poverty and only represent 5% of the folks that are resourced through there. So clearly the structure of PHA has been a challenge, is a challenge. And again, like anything else, you know, you have to sharpen up your toolbox. And so I think they've not evolved as much as they could. It's been quite a challenge to get them to look at places like Eastern North Philadelphia and looking at the private sector and how we subsidize and how we streamline. You know, to this day, no one can call PHA and just get a direct answer. That's a challenge.
Indeed it is. Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with our three guests. We are talking about Philadelphia's poverty problem, and you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. We're talking about Philadelphia, the poorest major city in the United States. And with us here in our Philadelphia studio, Sister Mary Scullion, and she's President, Executive Director of Project Home, and has been a home advocate and activist for a number of decades. Mariana Chilton is Director of the Center for Hunger-Free Communities at Drexel University in Philadelphia, co-principal investigator of Children's Health Watch, and joining us by telephone is City Councilwoman Maria Quinones Sanchez in her third term representing the 7th District. Let me read a couple of comments here. One from Marion says, City Council should stop the drop program and worry about the school system. I grew up in poverty in Philadelphia. I'm one of 9 children, but the difference is family values and life skills. My mother was widowed with 9 children. Family should be taught life skills, coping skills, focus on education. My mother did not permit any violence or fighting, but education. I have worked in Philly my whole life as a nurse, and education is missing. We haven't talked a lot about educating children in this city. What do you say, Maria Quinones Sanchez? Did we lose her? I think we might have. I don't hear her. What do you say, Mariana Chilton?
Well, I think that's extremely important, and I think our school district has been underfunded for many years, and it's going to take us years to build up our school system to where it ought to be. So that's, frankly, that's screaming for a class action lawsuit. So I totally agree that education is extremely important, but you can't just say education and then send someone to a low quality school where you have to go through a security bar in order to get in and not allowed to use scissors for adults and those kinds of things. So the other issue in our educational system is that you have a lot of families who are experiencing a lot of trauma and a lot of struggle, a lot of hardship, a lot of adversity. So there needs to be more wraparound services, more trauma-informed services. And that's why in one of our programs, the Building Wealth and Health Network, the other one that I was talking about, is that we recognize that a lot of families do need to have some extra life skills, need time to do that. What happens in cash welfare is they're forced into low-wage jobs without really attending to the fact that they didn't get a good education or that may have some real challenges in their own families. So we work on issues of trauma and providing peer support, creating a mechanism where people can build a network among themselves that's a positive network and work on their emotional issues and their lack of education, the lack of skills, where they can share resources and share their skills, also, and many other things as well. But I think that's a really great point, and I'm glad that she brought it up.
And so, I know you want to respond as well, Sister Mary.
So in Philadelphia, if you graduate from high school, you can make $10,000 a year more than those who don't graduate from high school. And in the past 10 years, 10 years ago, we had a 52% graduation rate from 4 years in high school. That's
terrible.
That's terrible. That's poverty generation, right? That's what's, you know, that's key in generating poverty. Today, the high school, the four-year high school rate is up to 67%. We have to get it up even further. And again, change takes time, thought, resources, trauma-informed, you know, programs, all of that. But that's the direction we have to go and invest in our children.
Let me read, and I'm sorry that we lost you for a second there, Councilwoman Quinones Sanchez. Let me read an email from Paul. Whoops, that just almost disappeared. He says, silly to blame Trump and the Koch brothers. Philadelphia and Pennsylvania has been liberal forever, not to mention 8 years of Obama education. Not always, not giveaways. Giveaways hold people down. And I'm sure Paul speaks for a lot of people saying,
well, then let's not give away the taxes to the corporations. Okay, let's bring it back. Let's not give the corporations the giveaways.
Let me, Councilwoman, go ahead.
Well, I think on the issue of education, I think we're going to have a really good debate this spring as we look at what local control looks like and what do we want to do different around governance, around transparency, and then articulating the new school district portfolio, right? The new normal is we have underfunded schools, the lawsuits have proven it, you know, the student weighted formula. We have every single data set that says we're not investing enough, but we want these, you know, trauma-induced children who live in, under these conditions, you know, we keep testing them and telling them that they're not meeting expectations when we know we're not putting into the system the resources needed to get them out. And I think we need to have a serious conversation about what the school district portfolio looks like and what does public education look like? What is it that we need to provide in every neighborhood? You know, there should be a good K-8 school in every neighborhood. Kids travel for high school. What is the portfolio of high school? How do we prepare kids for whatever they want to do, obviously for college, but the trade situation. And I think we've made some improvements in that. You know, we can't have all of these major universities and institutions and not have a better pipeline to higher education in the city of Philadelphia. And I think that conversation is going to happen this spring, and we're going to be back there again about what does governance and accountability look like.
And what you're referring to, of course, is the School Reform Commission no longer running the Philadelphia School District, and it's now back in local hands. Let me get Chuck from Ambler to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to bring up the fact that the one of the more egregious things that came up about the new tax bill in the weeds, it was just an offhanded comment, but I thought it just was so emblematic in that all the giveaways and goodies, talk about giveaways to the real estate industry, was the one tax break that they removed was for affordable housing.
Fair enough. Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Chuck, what you're referring to, and this was kind of, I would put in late in the tax bill, which gives all sorts of tax breaks for people who own real estate, and that, of course, includes the president's family and other people as well, but raising questions, Sister Mary, about this issue of affordable housing. And I want to make sure that we focus the last 10 minutes or so on what either is happening in Philadelphia or what could happen to address this intractable poverty rate. housing? I mean, is it just we need more of it? We need more affordable housing?
We definitely need more affordable housing in the city of Philadelphia. And it's the city, but however, locally, the city cannot alone solve the affordable housing crisis. We are fortunate to be in the state of Pennsylvania, where we have Brian Hudson, who leads the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency, who's done a tremendous amount of work for foreclosures. We've, with City Council and the City of Philadelphia, developed a great mortgage foreclosure program where families who are losing their homes when health care is the single most important indicator why a person loses their, why a family loses their home. And Pennsylvania did a lot to address that. However, even with a great Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency and a great local effort to address homelessness and affordable housing, without the federal government as a partner, this is not going to – it's just not going to happen. I mean, we have to engage and get the federal government more involved in a real housing policy, not only for people that are homeless and at the very end of the economic ladder, but also for the middle class, for families who own their homes and can't afford to keep them.
I was mentioning to Sister Mary before going on the air, there's a apartment building that is run or was put together by Project Home. It's in our area. I pass it every day, and it says, no one is home.
None of us are home until all of us are home. And that is just so true because, again, our country is we the people, not them and us. And we have to invest in all of our citizens to have the most basic human needs to thrive and to participate in our and forming our country and forming our city and forming our communities. We need their voices. We need their talents. We need their skills.
And I'm thinking that we mentioned this earlier, but I'm thinking these solutions here and Marianna Tilton thinking about the working poor. And it always sort of galls me to even say that. But what do we do to help the people who are working, as you say? We told them to go to work. They did do that, and they can't get out of poverty.
Well, number one, we have to improve wages, and they have to go way beyond. I think they have to be at least at $15 an hour. The other thing that we also need is family leave policy, sick leave policy. We need family-oriented, people-oriented policies and legislation around labor so that we actually pay people their true worth in their working world. The other thing is that I think, and that takes our private industry to step up to the plate. They have to pay their fair share. They should be paying fair wages. But there are other things that we can do. We can take matters into our own hands. It's not just up to the federal government or the state government or city council. If you think about the young children in this city of Philadelphia, there are about 44,000 young children under the age of five. They're living at the federal poverty line below right now. That's the same amount of children that could fit into, or same amount of people that could fit into the Citizens Bank Stadium, the Philly Stadium. Imagine it filled with infants and toddlers and preschoolers. What are we doing to invest in those kids? If Citizens Bank or the Phillies decided to add $1 to every Phillies ticket and put it into a savings account for a child, that's called investment in today. That's investment in today's children and investing in their future. There are lots of things that we can be doing to demonstrate that we're investing in our kids, investing in the people of Philadelphia, and investing in our city.
But are you saying then for even a toddler who's in poverty and maybe food insecure, that they come to believe that people don't care about them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think about Erica Smalley, a member of Witnesses to Hunger. She took a lot of photographs of terrible houses that have L&I stickers on them and abandoned lots and says, look at all of this. Why can't the city do something to improve the housing conditions? And secondly, I could fix up that house if I could only have access to it. And when I see this, I see that the city does not care about me. Then I start to feel less worthy. I start to stop caring for myself. That's very deep work that needs to be done in the city.
Okay, and you know, now I just want to, speak up here a little bit because, again, I think that the philanthropic and citizens like the owners of the Phillies have stepped up in huge ways. This affordable housing and hunger is not a private, is not alone
not
a
alone.
Private sector,
I agree. Yep.
A sector problem. And again, not that I was planning on saying, but I will now, is that the Lee and John Middleton gave the largest single gift, $30 million, to solve homelessness in Philadelphia and challenged the federal and the state and city governments to partner to create that. And so far, you know, they've created like over 800 units of housing. And again, the numbers, the data, Philadelphia has the lowest per capita rate of people sleeping on the street of the 10 largest cities in the United States, and we are the poorest. Mm. So it does show that the private sector stepping up with real solid leadership can and does make a difference. But to solve the problem, we have to do it as a community systemically. Mm. Public policy has to be a part of that.
Councilwoman, you want to weigh in on that at all?
Well, I mean, I think in council, we have, as I said, we've been as proactive around homestead and local payment plans, water affordability, preservation. You know, we started the land bank with that goal in mind, and even though it has not moved in the way we've wanted to, we do believe that going back to the 70s and the 80s, where we gave people an opportunity to acquire properties and do some of the sweat equity, that we got to go back to some of those opportunities and stop some of the bureaucracy that we create. Again, is how we look at this, right? Where do we invest? I know what we say, and then I watch what we do. And I think that we do provide very robust tax benefits and credits. And, you know, there's $400 million in tax cuts in our next five-year plan. We do all of those things for businesses. And I think that everybody has to feel a responsibility, but also a sense of urgency. As much as we're going to advocate at the federal and state level, locally, I think we really do have to look at how we make investments. And housing security is paramount, you know, with education and people having a warm place to sleep every single night will go a long way.
Well, let me read some more comments here. One from a listener: I pay most of my income on rent, and for my children's tuition, I can't send my children to the neighborhood school because of the violence. I travel across the city just to give them better opportunities. I'm thankful for local food pantries, too. An email from Ike: when was the last time anyone on this show took a bus ride in North Philadelphia? Ride the 54 and not as a tourist. You really don't know poor people. There's no investment in my neighborhood. I have to say that certainly the two guests sitting across from me and Councilwoman Quinones Sanchez, they do know poor people, but I think your point is that maybe enough people don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you want to respond?
Yeah,
to that,
I think that's a great invitation to ride the 54 and several other buses. I think people who live in Center City need to really understand what goes on and try to understand from the perspective of those who are living in it the type of deprivation that's there, this type of struggle, and also the wisdom and the brilliance and the grit of people who are low income. They are really struggling, but they are also entrepreneurs. I've learned from members of Witnesses to Hunger that they know how to generate a little extra income because they have to out of necessity. And that kind of brilliance needs to be invested in as well. We need to invest in people who are low income, who know how to make a little extra money. How can we help them turn their side hustles into legitimate businesses? That's something that we can do as in our systems, in cash welfare and beyond. I also think that, but back to the urgency issue,
right?
Infants and toddlers, or infants, are growing 700 neurons a second. This is extremely urgent for the youngest people in Philadelphia. Their brains are growing so fast, and any kind of deprivation during their childhood can have lifelong consequences. So we've really got to invest in the youngest children, I think, and their families that take care of them.
Sister Mary, I'm giving you the last word because tomorrow is Homelessness Memorial Day.
Right. So tomorrow we'll remember and celebrate the lives of the men and women who died on our streets this year. We do this every year, Homelessness Memorial Day, to remember and to give a voice and, you know, see the lives of the men and women that died on our streets. So this year, 1,200 people died from overdoses in the city of Philadelphia.
Heartbreaking.
I think about a third of them died actually on the street and homeless. We see, you know, the lives of the men and women that are homeless and, you know, and living on our streets, I think, are that prophetic voice saying that things do have to change. And we all have to be part of the solution.
Well, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today in Radio Time. Sister Mary Scullion, thanks for coming in. She is President, Executive Director of Project Home. Councilwoman Maria Quinones Sanchez, thank you for joining us by telephone.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And she's a Philadelphia City Councilwoman representing District 7. Marianna Chilton, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And she's director of the Center for Hunger-Free Communities at Drexel University and co-principal investigator of Children's Health Watch. Appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times. You can find out more about the program. Go to whyy.org. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.